welcome. Today we are speaking about family history. And my name is Helen Tovey. I'm editor of Family Tree. And this is
Nathan Ward, and I'm the designer.
And together, we love chatting about family history, don't we?
Yes, yes, we do.
Yes. So the main question is, Nathan, have you done your homework?
In the most roundabout way. Oh, who am I kidding? No, I've not done my homework. I went off on a tangent. So obviously, last time we spoke, I was going to go look at some like actual records and you give me some websites to go to. And my head's exploded, basically.
But I would say welcome, because I love it. You've gone off at a tangent. So we all learn all the rules we have to do, and we all are naughty and go off at tangents and go down rabbit holes. So you're fine. You're just a natural. Yeah.
I don't like it. Like I'm a bit of a geeky sort of completionist or collector. I want everything organized. I want everything ordered. I want everything to be exactly the same. So I went to look at these listings, these entries, and I ended up not knowing where to go. I was like, I could go backwards, or I could try and find the missing dates of these people's deaths, or wait a minute, he's got a brother. Why haven't I got the brother on there? I've just got my direct line. When do I need to start adding like brothers and sisters? And then after that, I was like, well, those two are married, but I've not done anything to do with their wedding. Do I need to log that? And I just got baffled. I was like, I do not know where to go. I have done some stuff. I just haven't done anything I thought I was going to do. I don't know whether I just need some help like focusing, or I don't know what my immediate path is. I just keep on getting excited by little random bits that aren't the right bits and going off on one. So I ended up looking at those hints on the Ancestry app. There was one about I think it was my great granddad. But his middle initial on this document was different to the middle initial that I've got. And I was like, ooh, discrepancy. I'm quite excited by this. And then I quote unquote cheated and looked at my mum's stuff, and she had the next generation back, and his dad was called David as well. So there's two generations of David. And then I found another one. So there's three generations of people called David Hearn. And that just confused me a lot, to be honest. But equally, I was quite excited about it. It's like quite cool. They've all like passed down the family first name and last name. I don't know. I'm just lost. I'm just literally going anywhere in a weird way, and it's not where I should be going.
None of the things you've done are a waste of time. They're all cool, aren't they? Because you're getting a feel for your family, and you're making discoveries that you didn't know about that one of three Davids. So you are making discoveries, but I know from personal experience, and I know from chatting to other people, once you start going around in circles a bit, you can end up feeling a bit confused, a bit demoralized, and it can seem a bit like it's a bit hard, and you're like, oh, I thought it was going to be easier. And you can feel a bit like put off doing your family history. So the easy, easy way to get out of that is literally set yourself a question that you want to answer, and you can write it on a piece of paper, shove it next to you when you're on your computer, and you go, today I want to find out my grandpa's death, whoever it is, my second great auntie's marriage. It doesn't matter who it is, but write down that goal. And then even when you find yourself getting distracted, then just keep with that goal. Now, it is really tempting when you see those other little stories. You want to find out about them. You don't want to ignore them. You're worried you're going to forget about those cool little nuggets that look tempting. So you can jot those down as well. So I do that on my research log. When I find all these little tempting side shoots, I just put hashtag to research. I'll literally type that in and I'll go great auntie's marriage, whatever it is. And you can come back to that another day because you've hashtagged it. You can just search in your research log for hashtags and they'll tell you all your to-dos. So you have to have a research question, something precise. It doesn't matter what it is. And probably you can have a big question. So your big question is, I want to do my family history. And then within that, you're going to be, I want to build my family tree. Within that, you're going to have all these little sub-goals. Like, I want to find their marriage. I want to find their death. So you could set yourself miniature goals. I'm going to make sure I've got all my grandparents' births and deaths. Check.
Right.
I think be a great grandparent. So use your methodical and completionist. Use all those powers. And if you think of a family tree, it's really helpful, isn't it? Because each generation, you go back in there. So you're going to make sure you've got all your grandparents' births and deaths. Then you're going to make sure you've got all your grandparents' marriages. Then you can do the same for your great-grandparents.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Anchored yourself a bit.
Yeah, it literally, because I it sounds daft, but I hadn't even considered the marriage side of it. I know in the magazine, I see a lot about like the marriage certificates, etc. But in initially like laying out the tree, none of that's coming up. It's all about getting back generations. It's not about the marriage side of it. And so as I'm doing that, the whole stuff about the marriage comes in. And then I'm thinking, well, like I said, they've got children as well who are not like my aunts and uncles or great aunts and uncles. It's a lot of information that I'm suddenly thinking about that I didn't realize I was going to be thinking about. And it's just mind-boggling. And like, it's like rabbit in headlights, isn't it? You're just like, oh my gosh, that's a lot. And I end up doing nothing. But
one little question, and each time you do a question, that's the kind of bit you'd have heard, you'd have read about it in a magazine, you'd have heard people say it a million times, like setting yourself a research goal, making a plan how you're going to do that goal, writing it all down, repeat. And that's, if you don't do that, forever you're going to find yourself wasting time and end up feeling a little bit unhappy that you haven't progressed as you hoped it was going to progress.
Yeah, I think there's initial sort of, I don't know what it is, like a flurry of excitement and urge to get so far back so quickly. And I'm literally then, it almost feels like erratic and panicked. I'm trying to throw as much information as I can on this tree as quickly as I can and get as far back as I can. And it's thrilling, but it's overloading. And I know if I was a bit more calm about it, a bit more methodical, I think I probably would be like, oh, this is enjoyable. It's relaxing. But I'm like, oh, I'm so excited. I want to get further back. And then that's obviously now where I'm finding that there's actually a lot more information to dig around than just being able to just plonk it all in there.
So you're definitely not alone in being that decision, because, you know, I don't know whether you remember, but last week I had to chop somebody off my family tree because I got it wrong about 10 or so years ago. So over the past week, I've been looking at what I had found out about that. And I almost kept thinking, how the heck did I arrive at my previous conclusion? Because I didn't have very much evidence at all. So I've been gathering together new information. And I've got a little bit sidetracked too, because I found my four times great grandpa's younger brother living with them. And then a bit after that, I found this other young woman living with them, who I think is my four times great grandpa's younger brother's daughter. Whatever. Yeah. So and part of me says, this isn't a waste of time. This is good and useful because I'll trace them forward. And that's the idea of tracing your wide, wide tree, which is good for finding your DNA matches, because my great-grandpa's younger brother's daughter's great-grandchild, whatever, could be a DNA match. Yay. And if I've traced forward and traced out, I'm going to be able to identify my DNA matches and work out how one of my DNA matches with me. So it's not a waste of time, but it wasn't really the goal I'd set myself. It was a little bit of a side shoot. And then I got intrigued because she was called Elizabeth, this young girl, and she was a farmer's daughter. So my four-time great-grandpa's younger brother was a farmer. And and she was 16 in the 1871 census. And then she was 24 in the 1881 census. And I was like, crikey, that's really young to start dodging your age, because it's quite a common thing for women. They don't age 10 years between the censuses, which take place every 10 years. That's it's a bit of a standing joke, but many of them don't age 10 years. It's remarkable. Over three or four censuses, you can kind of shave 17 years off your age. But I was surprised to see somebody so young already shaving 2 years off their age.
Yeah, that's cool.
That attracted me. So I had to definitely find out about her birth and find out what was she up to with her age. That's definitely a rabbit hole. I do not need to know about her politics with her age, do I?
No, that's cool. I did the same in lockdown. I decided I was going to age backwards. So I'm actually getting younger.
So how many years did you lose in lockdown then?
I'm not talking about it, because what happened in lockdown stays in lockdown. So that's where I stopped aging at that point.
Yeah.
So I'm now, what, 4 or 5 years younger than I used to be.
That's good. Very good.
It'll be on the census, don't worry.
Yes. See, all of this is family history of the future. Bacon's only aged 6 months in the last 10 years.
Yeah. Maybe not. I did find out something exciting on my tree, though. getting, you know, I said I was just in Pudsey and I'd never escape Pudsey. And one of the three Davids was born in India. So
fantastic.
That's really exciting, yeah. I feel like I need to brush up on some history now, though, because my knowledge of history is a bit rubbish. I'm guessing it must... When was the Boer War?
Boer War was in South Africa.
Oh, right, okay. Well, that proves my point, then. I need to both brush up on my actual history and know what the hell's going on. Yes.
So India's a big, big, long chapter of British connections. I think I could be wrong about this. I think in 1861, there were 2 million people in Britain who were living outside the British Isles, working in the civil service and things like that. Maybe not just the civil service, but in other industries as well. So one of the British Isles' biggest exports has always been its people. And so your grandpa's part of that story. Either he was working overseas or his dad was he was born in India, you say.
Yes.
His dad was working in some capacity in India. Could have been in the military, could have been in the civil service or industry.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Because you're going to find out that once you get into those sort of records, there are, you could get quite detailed records. You could be looking at passenger lists and civil service records. There are big collections with letters explaining, kind of letters explaining people's character, saying, you know, whether they're eligible to join the civil service in some capacity. So you could get quite personal information on them.
Right. That sounds like a rabbit hole to go down, though, as well. Like, this is, I think it's on my dad's mum's side. So her father's father, I think it was.
Yeah. So there's an amazing website called FIBIS, which is FIBIS, and it stands for Families in the British India Society. So it's a family history society, but it specifically deals with people like your however far away ancestor who was born in India. So people who born, British people who lived and worked and were born, etc., and married in India. And you go onto their website, and if you're a member, you can get access to more things, but they've got a database. You can go in and search on their name and you can see if you've got any promising leads.
Just okay.
Yes.
Brilliant. Okay. I think, this isn't a fact I've checked. It's come from my mum's searches previously. But he was born in Lucknow, in India, in 1864. So I don't know. I know nothing else. And clearly my history is pathetic, so I need to go and work out what was going on in India at that time.
Yeah, so there'd been a big mutiny, I think, in 1857. So the British were very much ruling India, and Queen Victoria was the Empress of India. So it was like the empire was in full swing and your relations would have been part of the cogs of that, whether you like it or not.
Right, okay.
Yeah. That's the thing about family history. So you can't really, well, you can pick and choose who you study and you can pick and choose what you think about it, but you can't pick and choose what they did.
No. You just have to deal with it.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting.
It is, and when I've got ancestors who, not India, but I've got ancestors who were out in South Africa in the Boer War, and you have really mixed feelings because it was massively to their advantage to be out there. My great great grandpa went out there, he worked as a merchant, so he's just trading stuff. He's doing not much work, you know. If you're trading, it's kind of he's not breaking a sweat necessarily. And he's out there with his wife and my great granny, who was a little toddler, and they had a pretty good life. They came back with lovely objects. They had a nice time, and they turned their lives around. Yeah, and I've on another side of my family, my great grandparents and my grandpa. So my grandpa was born in Kenya or Kenya. I think it was called Kenya in the olden days. And they likewise turned their lives around. So if you go back to their ancestors, they were like super poor in a one room house, and just in like a generation or two they suddenly got pretty comfortable, like not massively comfortable, but they had a nice, when they came back and retired to England in the 1920s, they had a nice semi-detached house and some fancy objects from far away. So I was like, well, that's pretty nice for them, but it's always at somebody else's expense.
Yeah, it's on the back of a little bit of darkness, yeah. And you found all that information out then? You've like found where they've lived and...
Well, both the two people I mentioned there, they're both on my mum's side of the family. My mum's side of the family is brilliant at stories. And to be honest, their stories check out, okay? So the people in the Boer War, then it was my ancestor called Thomas Dickin Jones. And he was about 40-odd by the time he was in South Africa at the time of the Boer War. He was not fighting, he was trading, he's a merchant. And my little great-granny's a little toddler. And he got told to go up country and to just basically spy on what was happening, to spy on the Boers. So he went up country, spied on the Boers, and when he came back, he reported to the British officials, I don't know who it was, what he'd found. And the British officials said to him, buy feathers. And so basically it was like, buy feathers. You know, just in the, and what happened at that time, feathers were really kicking off in the Paris fashion market for the massive big hats. Imagine like the turn of the, just around 1900, those massive big hats with massive big feathers on them.
Yeah.
So he got a tip to buy these feathers. He's bought masses of ostrich feathers and made a fortune, like proper fortune. And he didn't have a little semi. He ended up really comfortable. None of it came to me. But and just from this crazy little tip. Anyway, so yeah, I found him out there trading. And then, I mean, another of my grandpa's, he was actually, so that story with buy feathers, that came down through the family.
Yeah.
One of my other great-grandpa's, he was also out in South Africa. This is another cool family story, actually. So from the top, forget about him being in South Africa. When my grandpa went off to fight in the Second World War, he was about 19 years old. He actually, by chance, trained to be a pilot before the Second World War, just a few months before. And so he was up in the RAF super quick because he had he had all the skills he knew to be in the RAF. Yeah. So, but when he went off to war, his dad wouldn't look at him and didn't get out of his armchair and didn't say goodbye to him. And that was the family story we got told. And I was always like, oh my God, that is so mean. It's your only son and you don't even say goodbye to him when he goes off to war. Anyway, so that was the story handed down. And we're always like, that great grandpa, he's just so mean. And I did family history. So this great grandpa, I found out two things about him. One, in the First World War, he got awarded an MC, which is like a military cross for bravery. So he was he went above and beyond doing gallant things, helping his people, but then helping his side of the army. And then back in the Boer War, he'd actually been captured as a prisoner of war during the Boer War. So suddenly, in the light of those two facts, the fact that he was a prisoner of war in the Boer War and had done extra brave things in the First World War, I'm like, that's why he didn't say goodbye to his son, because he didn't have any patriotic, glorious ideas about war. He knew how awful it could be. So that basically, he probably couldn't bear to say goodbye to his only son going off to war. So suddenly, I saw him in a whole more compassionate light.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah. So wait, Nathan, what was I doing waffling about my family stories? You shouldn't let me get started. I won't shut up if you just let me waffle on a lot. Really? I've got to go. Christmas has been gone.
I don't know. At least you know the difference between India and Africa, though. That's good. It's more than I do.
Well, yeah, that's the cool thing about family history. There's so many cool things about it. But I mean, you do end up learning the weirdest things.
It makes me so aware of how little I know about the world, though. It's shocking. It's like to be able to put into context when and where your relatives are, you need to know the history, don't you? And that's, I think, I don't know, I wasn't expecting that. Or if I was, I wasn't expecting how ignorant I'd suddenly feel. It's very strange. It's a time and a place, isn't it? And I want that context. But then again, if I'm thinking like that, that's a lot more work again. When I'm already blowing my head up thinking about whether I'm putting siblings in or whether I'm putting birth certificates in, it's It's a lot, isn't it?
It is. That's why, you know, sometimes you hear people and they go, oh, people say, have you finished your family history? And it's like, it's not, I don't even think it's something you could finish. I mean, I wouldn't want to finish mine. I just wouldn't want to finish it. It's not even a concept I entertain. It's not even a goal I have of finishing it. Like, you might finish different aspects of it. You set yourself your mini goals, but you don't want to finish it. That's just weird.
I don't know how you could, though. There's so much to go at. And obviously, I imagine it must get really hard the further back you get. But then, is that part of the appeal still as well? It's more of a challenge. So you're pushing and digging and scratching for just any sort of clue.
Yeah, I think it's definitely the appeal that you can keep on challenging yourself. And like you said, back at the start, you said you'd found some things and they really kind of piqued your curiosity and you wanted to find out. And it's that feeling, it's like, it's human nature, isn't it? There's a puzzle or something unknown, or when we watch detective things or even just any old movies, we're always trying to guess what happened next or guess why people did things. And that's being human. We love knowing.
Yeah, it's like doing a jigsaw, isn't it? You just add in one piece and it's that satisfaction of every time you've done a bit. Oh, that feels good. I think I'm lacking that a little bit at the moment because I've got this backlog of stuff that my mum's given me.
Yeah,
I'm not getting the gratification. It's kind of like, well, this knowledge has been handed down to me. I want a sort of eureka moment where I'm like, oh my god, this connects. Or I don't know, maybe I'm romanticising it all a bit too much, but that's kind of what I imagine it must be like when you find that one record that you were missing that tells you the next person down. I don't know.
No, you do feel really pleased, but it depends on your... I feel pleased and I definitely know, but I also spend a lot of time feeling really uncertain. I'm like, I think this is the person, but I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah. Like filling in a crossword when you're not 100% sure it's the right answer.
And then you're trying to make the next word, but you've got the slightly dodgy worded before and you get more and more pieced. Yeah.
Second letter can't be X. Yeah. I've also got a tangential thing where I'm thinking I could probably do this for two generations, maybe. I know my mum and dad have got like lots of pictures around the house. I want to have a picture of everybody on my tree that I can get so that when I go into the app, it looks... I guess this is like the sort of arty side of me, but I want to like have pictorial things where it's not just the logos, it's that person, and then get a feel for the characters more. But again, it becomes in my head a completionist thing where I need a picture of everybody. It's like Pokemon for adults.
Yes. So you might get a picture for you from as your tree grows and like seeing other people's family trees on Ancestry. So even people you haven't got pictures for in your mum's trunk, you might find pictures in other people's trees. Obviously, there's going to be a cut-off point, isn't there?
Definitely, yeah.
But maybe not with AI. People are probably generating AI photos. Like, make a photo from the 1820s.
All cameras existed. Here we have a photo.
It's going to muddle things up because people will do that. And isn't it? It's definitely going to happen.
It is, yeah.
When happening, yeah.
I just like, I guess, again, I'm romanticising, but I know I've seen a few pictures and I don't know who they are, but instantly I'm like, oh, there's a story there. Like, I think I've mentioned about my great granddad had like a budgie van or something. He'd go around the village selling budgies. And I'm sure there's a really nice picture of this ornate vintage car and him stood outside with my granddad or something. And I want like that picture would look great on my family tree. And then it just creates, this person becomes a person instead of just a name on that list. It's a nice idea.
And just even the hobby of owning budgies, that's such a vintage hobby. I didn't know that people do that anymore. Like when I was a kid, I think people still like budgies a lot, but it's kind of...
Yeah, and to have an actual van that goes around selling them to people.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then now thinking about it, like, why did it stop being so fashionable? Is it the ethics of keeping a bird in a cage is going to be key, isn't it? People think this is really necessary to have a caged animal.
Yeah, I imagine.
Was there anything else? You're going to have to find out that as well, Nathan. There's just so much to do. You're going to have to become the leading world expert on the history of budgerigar keeping.
I wonder if it's got anything to do with coal mining.
Could be.
But who knows? We'll soon find out. Don't give me that as homework because that sounds like a big task.
Yeah, it will be. Yeah. I mean, people have always loved pets, haven't they? I love it. We went to Bletchley Park back in the summer, and it was really fascinating, moving, a little bit stressful. But the most stressful bit was they had a display about the carrier pigeons, and they had the little tiny harnesses where the messages would get put in their little backpacks.
Yeah.
And I just found that harrowing, because the birds are flying through, like, you know, all the gunfire, and they're just flapping their little wings and just keeping on with their mission. So, oh, I can't. And the poor little pigeons can handle the humans, just not the pigeons.
Did any pigeons win any medals, do you know?
Oh, yes, yeah. I don't know the names of any particular pigeons, but pigeons did win medals. And there's a special Victoria Cross for pigeons, or for all animals. It's called the Dickin Medal.
Right, cool.
Yeah. So animals get awarded it for all sorts. I remember really once there was this Newfoundland, so great big fluffy, you know, Newfoundland dogs, like, don't you? It's like a bear.
Yeah.
Okay. And I'm guessing it was probably a mascot for a Canadian regiment, but I don't know which one. Anyway, a grenade landed in amongst this group of soldiers, and the Newfoundland dog, who was the mascot, rushed and grabbed the grenade and ran away with it. And the story is that it was rescuing all its people from getting killed by the grenade, but the poor dog got killed.
Right.
But I don't know whether the dog knew that or whether it was just playing fetch. I was like, oh, God.
Yeah. Well, let's hope it was the former. It sounds much better.
Let's hope he was being deliberately, self-sacrificial. I kind of hope he was.
But equally, it must be cool. If you got a medal for just playing, that's quite nice as well. So
we did have to die to get it.
Yeah, no, that is the sad part, I guess.
That is the sad part. Yeah.
And just going back a bit, did we give you some homework last time?
Yes.
Have you done yours?
Well, so that's where I got sidetracked. So I've done a little bit. I did assess what I'd found so far, and it wasn't very good. And then I did think, right, I'm going to take stock of everything that I know and do take the medicine that I've been telling you. So about my new research goal, with my new research plan. So I have been doing that. And as I was going, the things I was doing, I thought, oh, Nathan, these would be really handy hints for Nathan actually as well. So I'm having to look afresh at new names on my family tree for this branch. I locked off the old names. I've got this brand new name, Evanson. So it's people I don't feel confident with. It's like a new branch. So I don't really like that feeling. I like to know my people and feel confident with them. And some of the places that I was finding for them, they were in the right sort of vicinity, but I wasn't exactly sure. So one really, really helpful thing is when you're looking for people in the databases, sometimes you can come up with quite a long list of search results and you're not really sure which are your people. But very often the people, as well as having dates, they have places. So whether it's church names or registration district names or anything, they've got place names, haven't they? And those place names are going to be really helpful to you for assessing, are these my people or not, out of the list of search results. So in tandem with your search results, you need to be using two other resources. One is the Family Search Map website. I don't remember what it is. You just Google it and it comes up, but I'll find out what it is. I think it's just familysearch.map. Anyway, that website has all the different boundaries. So for me, this is really helpful because I was finding parish names and I was thinking, oh, this parish I found for these people who I think are my new people, that's only two or three parishes away. So that's only a couple of miles away from where my relatives are. I'm in the kind of roughly right area. So I know that those search results are promising. And then so the Family Search website is very factual. It's kind of a modern digital map with lots of efficient boundaries on it. And then the other website you need is the National Library of Scotland maps website, because that has beautiful old maps. And so you can find maps which are roughly in the right era, roughly the right decade for the period that you're looking in. And then again, you can look at place names for your area. And it's just really helpful for helping you. You said about you weren't sure about places, even within England, even if we might know where all the counties are, but once you start looking at a new places to you in around the country, we don't know where all the little parishes are. I think there's about 10,000 parishes over England. So we need to keep ourselves informed. So those two websites, use them with your search results. Know about the places, because it's going to be crucial.
This is making me feel a bit sweaty now, to be honest.
Ethan.
It's like, all right, okay. So all those people I've put in, I need to add more information.
Well, you don't need to add more, but when you're looking at search results, to know, let's say you get a big long list, even 10 or 15 people of your David Hearns. Is it Hearn or Heard?
Hearn, yeah.
David Hearns. Some of them you'll be able to fairly confidently think you're not of interest to me because you're Leicestershire, you're Kent, whatever. But these David Hearns, these are Yorkshire, they're more promising.
Yeah.
And of course people did move, but it gives you, keeps you warmer or colder. So it's helpful.
I saw a bit of that in practice on, even like with my dad. I don't know which record it was off the top of my head, but there was a census record and then a birth record. And one of them was West Yorkshire and the other one was somewhere completely different. I don't know why it picked it out, but it's like, obviously that's not my dad, but it was interesting to see that come through and made me think, oh, right, okay. I need to be careful about all these facts because it could end up being somebody completely different.
Definitely. Like when you're looking at the hints can be useful, but you have to check them out.
Mm.
Yeah. And ancestry kind of hold your hand to help you do this. You know, they tell you it's a hint and then it's up to you. Do you want to review the hint? They go, do you want to review it? They don't say, do you want to just slap it on your tree without considering it any further? They go, do you want to review it? So you have to review it. And yeah.
Yeah. I'm not at that stage yet though. I like the hints and I like seeing the records, but I feel like I want to get my core stuff down, and then once I've done that, I'll like dedicate a month or two where I'm saying, right, I'm subscribing to the full package. I'm going to go in, look at all these records, and then like confirm loads of hints. And I guess, again, I could set that as a task, couldn't I, at some point? Like, right, I'll go back two generations and check all the hints, and that can be my job for the month. Let's see. I'm sure that's going to send me off on other tangents, but it sounds like fun.
So maybe we need just a little small goal. You need just one goal next week. What would you want to do most out of all of the things? What one thing?
Honestly, I want to add the photographs, but I know that's not going to progress me anywhere. But I'll do that in the background.
Just make that your goal. I think that's fine. It's supposed to be funner.
Yeah.
To add the photos. Yeah.
Okay. I'm just obsessed with data capture though for some reason, and then the app is so useful and so handy, and it invites you to do more, doesn't it? As soon as you put one person, it's like, oh, do you want to add a parent for these people? And like, I do want to add a parent for these people. So then you go off on a tangent, and then it's like, I've just gone off on my dad's mum's side. I was just meant to be doing my dad's dad's side. And yeah, it's, yeah. My new
captain. So it is helpful, but that's why I can't urge you enough to have your own goal. Like if you didn't have any goals or any clue at all, then it is really helpful, the app kind of encouraging you around, like coaxing you from one thing to the next. But you've got your own things you want to accomplish, and you're really lucky you've got that treasure trove, that box of papers from your mum. It is a mixed blessing because it means you've got a lot of data to go through.
Yes. I think that's it, isn't it? It's like if I didn't have any, I'd be like, okay, what's beyond my granddad? And then I'd have to actually go manually find a record myself and be like, okay, this is this person. And then I get the basic details, whereas I can, like I keep saying, cheat and just throw it all on there. But because I can do that several hundred times, it's a lot of information to take in. And then I'm not really verifying any of it yet. So that's, I guess, something I personally want to do just to make sure it is right.
But on the other hand, if the information is coming from your bum's box of papers, it's got credibility. Yeah, obviously somebody could have tweaked their own age when they were telling the priest how old they were when they got married or something like that. So there might be, you know, there are going to be small discrepancies within it. But you know that marriage certificate is definitely for your great-grandparents, because they're not going to have ordered some other person's by the same name and shoved it in the trunk. So you've got that confidence factor. So the verification is less important for you at this stage when you're going through your parents' papers.
Yeah.
Because you know that David Hearn born in 1920 is your David Hearn. It's not going to be in that trunk otherwise. So when you go in searching on Ancestry, they've got billions of records, that there's hundreds of David Hearns. That's when you need to be cross-referencing everything like mad to make sure you've got your David Hearn. So you're good for the moment, yeah?
Yeah, cool.
Okay, Nathan, so would you share your tree? Let's have a look at your tree and see the progress so far.
Okay, here we go. You're going to have to direct me. I actually normally do this on the phone.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I don't know where... So if I click on trees, I guess.
Yes.
Ward family tree. Here we go.
Oh, brilliantly.
This looks better, actually, because it's showing me further.
So it's showing you everybody that you've added so far. Yeah. This is really good. So if you open up any of them on their profile, one of the profile people.
Okay. We'll open one of the Hearns up. Let's open George up. David George Hearn.
So you've got some facts in, and it's saying like add a source. So you just got your hint. So you're doing well. So you've got the birth and the death for this person. You know, go back to your tree, Nathan. Okay, cool. So if you just hover over one of the people in your tree, and then a little white box will pop up giving you brief details about them.
Okay. Anyone in particular?
Anyone you like, yeah. And you'll have their name, have their birth and death date, and then there'll be four little boxes or kind of buttons. One says profile, one says search, one says hints, and one has three little dots. And if you press the one with three little dots on it.
Yeah.
And then scroll down where it says add tag.
Okay.
And then these tags, I think you're going to potentially find them quite helpful when you're working on your tree. Now, I think the tags only work on when you're on the Ancestry website. I don't think they will work on your phone, but these tree tags are going to be really helpful to help you keep organized. So if you look at where it says my tree tags, you can see it has the research status. So actively researching. So anyone who you're actively doing stuff to, you can press that tag.
Right.
If you go to the top of the little menu, so it says my tree tags, and it says notes and comments. You can write notes in there. So things perhaps you want to do.
Cool.
Go into custom tags. Then if you go create custom tag, you can create your own tag. So you could create a tag called to do or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Then you can add that to everyone who you want to do something to. So you could methodically go through your tree. I think this might appeal to you. You're going to create your custom tag, which is going to be like to find marriage or something like that, or just call it marriage, to do marriage or something, to do death or whatever you want to find. And then you can go through, tag it onto everyone who you need to do that to. And then you can search on your tags next time you go on your tree, and you can search on and all the people you've tagged with to do marriage, or bring up a list of them, and you know you've got to find and add their marriage details. So it'll help you make your own plan. You haven't got a bit of paper. You're not being led around the houses by all the lovely prompts, and you're taking charge a little bit of what you want to do with your family history. Does this sound like it might appeal to you?
It appeals a lot. And like, to be honest, this is the first time I've looked at my tree on a computer. I've been doing it on the app, and I do love the app. I have to say it's really engaging, really inviting. But this feels calmer already, just actually being able to see my tree go back the generations. Because, like, I think on the app it stops after two generations back, and then you have to press a button to see further back. Whereas this is showing me everything I've put in. Like you said about the tags, that sounds great. I take it once I say, like, if I do to do the wedding, once I've done that, can I just then remove that tag from that person and then they appear in that list?
Yeah, definitely.
That's really good. Yeah.
So let's go through. So on your tree thing, at the moment, what we're doing is we're looking at the view of your tree, and it's viewing sideways with you on the left-hand side going back through the generations back in time over to the right-hand side. So if you go into the top left-hand corner of your screen, and then there's two different options. So then you can click to view it vertical. At the moment, you're viewing it horizontal. You click to view it vertical. This is really fun because if you've added in any siblings, then the siblings of your direct ancestors will show up
right
here. Have as well.
Any of that yet?
That's okay. But when you do, then they will show up. And so that's it gets more messy, but it's also more of a comprehensive view of everyone you've added. And there's one last useful thing. There's loads and loads of useful things, but I'm not going to bog you down with everything. Is, can you see in that left-hand menu, it's got a picture of a person with a little magnifying glass. It's the third
item.
Yeah, finding tree. So if you press that, then you can search on their name, which at the minute you can see everyone quite well. But once you start adding in all those siblings, once you get more generations, it's a really quick way to navigate to somebody who you want to work on. So
cool. So I've typed in Hearn and it's given me
all the people relevant. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's cool, isn't it?
It is cool. Although I've only got two Davids and I said there were three. So there must be one that I've not input yet. I think I might be missing some facts that made me not want to put him on.
Yeah, I think you're making good progress. I think you just need a bit of a to-do list vibe going on. So those tags, that's my recommendation to you. And I'd still recommend that you have your research log. So you've got your research log. Have you waffled about that before?
A little bit, yes. Yeah. I'm not saying that I've done one though, but I think I'm going to have to start.
You are. It could be a paper notebook. It could be a note in your phone. It can be a Word document. It could be anything. It can be an Excel sheet. It doesn't matter. You need some system, paper or digital, that you're going to write down. So that's your research log. Call it my family history research log. And every time you're going to do a research session, you're going to write the date, say 6th of December or whatever date it is. Even write the year, because before you know it, the years go by. And then you're going to write on that day, you're going to say your research goal for the day is whatever it is, X, Y, and Z. So through that session, you've got that, your question, your goal written down, the thing you want to accomplish. And so that can keep being your prompt to keep you on track, to keep you away from the rabbit holes.
Yeah, that sounds really good.
I think this is good progress.
Oh, thanks.
Yes. I mean, you've got all your great grandparents in, and you've got, as far as I can see, you have got all of their births and deaths. So, and you've got your
one, which is my granddad, which is terrible. I don't know when he died, but yeah.
So it's, and that granddad who you don't know is your mum's dad. So you can ask your mum.
Yes, it is literally just asking, but yeah.
So, okay, while we're talking, you're going to open up a Word document, call it My Family History Log, put the date on it. It's up to you to make it up as you want. So what I suggest you do is at the top of your Family History Log, just have a section called To Do, or To Do Next Time, whatever. And under here, you're going to write, ask mum for grandpa's when grandpa died, and add it to Ancestry Tree. I'm such a forgetful person. I had to tell myself every single step of everything. Otherwise, I'll forget to do half the job.
Yeah. I think the only reason that I haven't done that is because like my mum did all of her family history research 10, 15 years ago, and he died after that. So it's in the logs that I've been looking at. It hasn't been updated.
But that's one job. Then the next job on your to-do list is find and add the marriage details for everybody on your family tree so far.
Yeah. See, this appeals to me. This is like that completionist thing. It's like, don't let myself get back further than two generations until I know all marriage details for those lot. And then I can just wipe them out, forget about them, and move further back. Well, not forget about them, but...
You've written fine marriage details, yeah. So it's for your for everyone on your tree so far. So that's up to your great-grandparents, isn't it? All 8 of your great-grandparents, yeah?
Yeah.
And for your grandparents. And then as your treat, you can add a photo to each person.
Yeah. I think that'll be fun as well, like just getting my mum to get like all the pictures out and just talking through who these people are. Because I think, again, I've said I've been sort of, as a child, really ignorant of all these family photos that I've seen dotted about, like my mum and dad's house, my grandparents' house. But you just see them, you go, oh yeah, they're my relatives. I don't have a clue who they are. So it'd be good to like put names to faces and vice versa.
Definitely. It'll be good. It'll be fun. And it's absolutely vital because your mum presumably knows the answers to lots of these questions and you don't. So if you don't ask her, you're not going to suddenly get the information magically in the future.
No. I mean, she is my last line, basically. I've got some great aunts and uncles left, but I need to really ask my mum as much.
Really need to ask your mum. And so with that, you can have one profile photo per person, but then add all of the photos, or at least make sure you've scanned them in and named them. If you don't want to add them all to Ancestry, that's your call, whether you do or you don't. I personally, I think that would be fine too, as long as your mum's happy at that. But make sure those photos, she doesn't just tell you. Again, it's that you need to be writing that down. Don't think, oh, I'm going to remember who that is, because you won't. You need a system. So the easiest way is when she tells you, you can either just take a photo of it and get her to record it. You can record her talking about it, or you can type up what she's saying. Like, you take a photo and just write a written description for each photo. It doesn't matter how you go about it, but you need to have it written down or recorded as audio or video.
Definitely. I'm becoming increasingly aware of all that. Just like I said, the amount of information there is.
Yes. So add photos. And then to the step four is so important, is ask mum to put for names, dates and occasions to do with the photos, because you just want to know, oh, that's Uncle Sid.
Yeah.
In 1934. You want to know what the occasion was. You know, he just got his first job, or is added to the family story, doesn't it? So, and these jobs, now they're written down, don't you feel calmer now they're all written down?
I do. And like, I can literally, when it's homework time, I can come off and just cross these off, as opposed to, like you said, going on a tangent and ending up who knows where.
Yes. And so what I would do is next line. So you've got your to-do list and you keep on adding things there. On my to-do list, I don't even know how many things I've got on it. In my main to-do list, I think I've got about more than 30 things. And then I have other little separate to-do lists. But because they're written down and because I have my research log, I can pick them up and do them whenever I get the chance to do my family history. So the next one is you've got your general to-do list. And then personally, I have a thing which goes to do next time. So that's my priority job. So it doesn't matter which of those jobs they are. I would say is asking your mum for names, dates and occasions, because to be blunt, you can find the marriage details and you can add the photos anytime, but
right,
suddenly the years go by and you're like, I wish I'd asked mum.
Yeah, more pressing things that,
yes,
might not be down on paper anywhere.
Yes.
I get you.
And you're never going to find the answers to whether that's Uncle Sid or Uncle George in the photo from a database. Well, you might have a distant relation who knows the answer, but you're going to be able to look in the census whenever, but you're not going to be able to find out that dog in the photo is called Jack or anything. That's,
yeah.
Well, your family's stories and memories.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like quite a nice evening, to be honest. Just to get the photo album out, nice glass of wine and just...
Oh, fantastic. Yes. And just like, you, as you say, you're an arty person and a visual person, so... Just looking at everyone's old clothes and their fashion and the home decor, the cars, there's so many evocative things, just bringing back a different world. There's a picture of my granny and grandpa I love, and they just got married, and it's when they're kind of going away, so they've just getting in the car to go off on their honeymoon. So my granny's got out of her wedding dress into her other little outfit, and they're just stepping into this old London taxi, and there's an old traffic light just jammed up in the corner of the photo. It's a real snapshot, but everything about the picture is that just post Second World War era. It's just fantastic. I think I've tried to persuade you to put it on the cover of the magazine, but you're like, nah, it's too grainy. But it's such a great picture though.
Maybe I'll soften now. Maybe I'll...
Oh, you will. Maybe you will. You'll know why I was so excited about it. Yeah,
definitely. I think I said it before. I've got one where it's my family at Brimham Rocks. I'm into climbing, so I've got all the climbing gear. I like climbing, and then this picture is of all my family at Brimham Rocks, but they're all dressed in their Sunday best. So they've climbed up these rocks to stand for this picture, like with the canes and the shirts and ties and hats on. It's like, well, that's not climbing gear, but they look immaculate. It's amazing.
It is amazing. Yeah, yeah. It's very impressive, isn't it?
Yeah.
As a mum, I always find it amazing. I have lots of people in my family, ancestors and current family, who love dogs. And so nowadays your dog might jump up at you or you're cuddling it, but you always get muddy and dog furry. And that's one thing, because we have our scruffy modern day clothes, we chuck them in the washing machine and who cares? Whereas when I look at these pictures from 100, 120 years ago, people are wearing clothes, many of which are still sewn by hand, knitted by hand, made of non-machine washable materials, and they didn't have a washing machine anyway. I'm like, and you still cuddle the dog when it's all muddy. And it's like, oh, I'm a bit OCD and obsessive. I'm like, I can't believe you did that. But yeah.
Yeah, I imagine there must have been some interesting fragrances around.
Yes, yes, yeah. Okay, well, you got your homework. So my homework, I'm going to try not to get too distracted by my great-grandpa's little brother's daughter. But I am going to finish off. I'm going to tie that up with a bow, get them all properly established on my tree, because maybe work forwards a little bit from them. And then I'm going to get back to the main event, which is my Mary Ann Pickering.
Nice, fantastic.
One day I'll learn about her childhood. Okay, so I think that is everything. I feel like we have covered a lot of ground. We have made progress, haven't we, Nathan?
We have, yeah. I still feel like it's making my head spin, but this is definitely going to help me focus. It's nice to have some calmer things to go for as opposed to just randomly throwing myself in there. It's going to be good.
Definitely. And thanks everybody for listening. And we would love to hear from people. So if people do their family history and not use a family history log and manage to keep calm in the process, we'd love to hear from you. And if you do your family history and you find yourself going around a little bit in circles thinking, I think I've looked at that before, and you think you'd like to use a family history log, then follow Nathan's good new steps that he's doing. Grab anything and a piece of paper or a notebook and start writing down what you're doing and setting yourself clear, calm goals. It's got to be a nice way to go.
Definitely. I'm definitely now an advocate. Even before I even start, I believe in this process.
It's good. Okay. Well, yep. We look forward to next time.
Yep. Thanks for listening. Thanks for joining us.